It's time to get started. Welcome, everybody. Chanukah Sameach. Hope everybody's enjoying, and we should have lots of light. There's too much darkness in the world. And a pleasure to welcome Ruth Shane. I think everybody here knows her, not only because she comes to all the classes, but her insightful comments and questions that she makes on so many of her classes. And really, thank you. And it's really nice. She asks, you know, if she could give, it's not the first time, I'm sure you know, she's giving a parsha shiur, but she's asked to give a shiur, so we're very happy to accommodate. She lives in Baltimore, as you heard, really has a background in science, graduate of Barnard and Yale University, and worked for many years in the department, in the scientific field, both, I think, in New York and in Baltimore, but now spends her time learning and teaching Torah. So it's a pleasure to have you, and Vakasha, it's all yours, Ruth.
Thank you, Rabbi Jay. Thank you for allowing me to come back. It was 2 years ago that I gave the Parshat HaShavua for Miketz, and I left saying, I have so much more to say. And so now I've come back to have more to say. Okay, so 2 years ago, I was talking about Yosef and how he used his own life and his own dreams to interpret the Paro's dreams, and how he feels God communicating with him, even though there is no Vayomer Hashem El Yosef. But he has that. He's tuned in. He feels he can. He's alert to divine help when it comes. And his father Yaakov Yisrael has that same ability, and he's going to use it now in this story in Miketz. So we're starting off now in the famine has already started. So we're in Miketz chapter 43. I just want to make one more introductory statement that the divine author uses a literary technique. We could say he invented it, but he uses it very well. And that's the technique of intertextuality. Or as Rabbi David Foreman likes to put it, where have we heard these words before? And the divine author uses it quite often in Torah to telegraph to the reader, to us, that things are happening in the present scene and we need to connect them to a previous scene, sometimes to a future scene. But this is the technique of letting us, the reader, in on a secret that only we know and Hashem knows, but the characters themselves don't know right away. If we keep our ears open and if we let our minds loosen up a little bit, we can pick up these words, these phrases that trigger a connection between the present scene and a previous or future scene. And if we're listening carefully and if we're looking carefully, it's hiding in plain sight. We just have to find it. We have to be tuned into it. And when the characters themselves are triggered by these words that the divine author is using on purpose so that we're in on it too, we, the reader, that triggering of something that someone is saying to a person in one scene, which takes them to another part of their life or another part of the story, and then uses the previous scene to illuminate or explain what is happening in a present scene. So the character who is listening and being triggered by these words that we are being triggered by, he uses a previous part of his life to interpret what is happening now, just like Yosef used his and his father's life experience and his previous dreams to interpret the Paro's dreams, like on the spot. We call that Ruach HaKodesh, but you'll see. All right, so let's go right into chapter 43. I'm going to pull up on the screen just the text. So if you have a chumash, you can open it up. Don't fret. If you the source sheet that you might have downloaded right away is just a table, which we will get to, but this is just text. So let's see. This should do it, I hope. Nope, that's not what I want. Sorry. Gonna get rid of this. All right, and this is what we need here. Okay. Sorry. There. Okay. So this is where we start off. Oh, no. Sorry. Please excuse me. We need to start before the famine has started, but not chapter 43. Okay. We're in fact chapter 42. All right. Quick summary. The boys are sent down to Egypt because Yaakov says, oh, I hear there's grain in Egypt. You know the story. They go down to Egypt. Yosef finds them. They don't recognize Yosef. He recognizes them. He gives them a hard time. He accuses them of being spies. And he grabs Shimon and holds him hostage and lets the rest of them go home. But they can't come back unless they have their little brother, Binyamin, with them. Okay, so Shimon's in jail. He's a hostage. And they go home with the food. And they can't, and if they want Shimon back, they're going to have to bring Binyamin down. Okay, so when they come home, they empty their saddlebags. They see the money. They all freak out. And Yaakov freaks out when he hears them say, we can't get Shimon back unless we take Binyamin to Egypt. So we have to show him to the viceroy in Egypt or else Shimon's, you know, he's going to be in jail forever. Okay, so that's where we pick up the story, where Yaakov is reacting to the whole idea of the only way he can get Shimon back is to send Binyamin with the other brothers down to Egypt. And so I'm going to shift screens from this Mechon Memre to a wonderful sheet I made on Safari, which is all color-coded and everything. Okay, here we go. This is, can everybody see this?
Right, no, we're not seeing your screen.
You are not?
Just have a blank screen.
That's interesting. Okay, I have to stop share and start it again.
I mean, it says Parshat Mikates, but it's
It's Safari. All right. Okay, this should show up now. Now is it showing up?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's just Safari's quirkiness. Okay. All right. So it's the same text, but I'm using it. It's highlighted, et cetera, et cetera. English on the left, Hebrew on the right. Okay. So now they've just said the only way we can get Binyamin back is we're going to have to take, to get Shimon back, we have to take Binyamin. Yaakov blows a gasket and he says to them, Yaakov. Now I've greened Yaakov just so that it's going to switch it from Yaakov to Yisrael. I'm just putting Yaakov's name in green. Yosef's words will be in purple. So he says to them, Oti shikaltem Yosef einenu, Shimon einenu, ve'ed Binyamin tikachu alai. So he says to them, he says to them, you have bereaved me. I love that English, old English word. You have robbed, shikal is the Hebrew word for losing a baby or losing a child. So it's usually a parent is shikal. That's the particular word for a child that dies or is never born. So he says, made me, childless because Yosef, he's blaming them. She called him Yosef. And now he's very angry because, you know, he's very angry at this whole thing. And so he spews this out. She called him Yosef. So the word shikal, just remember, I've purpled it because it's a Yosef word. It'll come up again. So I want you to see it now. Okay. He says, I can't. I've lost Yosef. Shimon's, you know, in jail somewhere in Egypt, and I can't. Now you want to take Binyamin from me? And he's very, very angry about that, and he doesn't want to give in. So Reuven steps up because he's the eldest, and he feels responsible, and he steps up and he says to his father, "Look, et shnei banai tamit im lo avienu elecha." Literally translating that is not doing justice to what Reuven is saying. So if you translate this as, my two sons you can kill if I don't bring him back to you, that would not be what Reuven is actually saying, because what that's kind of stupid what he's saying. But this is the contorted, ancient way of saying, I will treat him as if he were one of my boys, and I would not let anything happen to them. Do you think I would let you kill my children? I would not let you kill my children. I wouldn't let that happen. I will protect Binyamin as if the lives of my children depend on it. I will protect him the best way that a father can protect his child. Just give me the boy and let me go take him down to Egypt so we can get Shimon back. And then Yaakov answers, Lo yered b'ni imachem. My son is not going with you. His brother is dead, and he's the only thing I've got left. Left, he doesn't say left from, but it's from Rachel, his chief wife, his wife. And then he says, this is important, Ukra ahu ason baderach. Something could happen. Ason is mildly an accident, but it really means a catastrophe, a disaster. Something disastrous will happen to him on the way, and then I will go to my grave, in total grief. So, why is Yaakov so worried about something happening to Binyamin? Because he knows things happen. That's what happened to Yosef. And he also feels guilty because he sent Yosef on that trip to Shechem. And Yaakov thought he had everything worked out. Yosef's going to go to Shechem. He'll find the brothers or he won't find the brothers and he'll come home. Yaakov didn't count on Yosef wandering around and going farther and farther. He couldn't control that. That's the ason. Yaakov knows firsthand that an ason happens, and you can be as protective as you can. Reuven, you can't protect against everything. You can't control events. Okay, and so the bottom line is, no, you can't take Binyamin. That's it. And everybody sits tight. And Shimon, Yaakov is saying, if I have a choice between Binyamin and Shimon, I'm going to take Binyamin. I want Binyamin more than I want Shimon. It's a very terrible thing, a choice, a Sophie's kind of choice. But that's what he does. Now, the divine author is, among other things, he does have a sense of humor, and he does use words ironically. And this is just a little aside, but I can't resist pointing it out. Yaakov believes that an ason happened to Yosef, a disaster. And we find out that, Yosef did come, well, he did meet an ason. He met an ason, but it wasn't disastrous. If Yaakov only knew what actually happened to Yosef, he wouldn't have said this. What am I talking about? We look down here. Meanwhile, in Egypt, Yosef is now the viceroy, and he's been given all these honors, and he's, he is the second in command. Paro also gave him another name. So now, just for a moment, take a look here at, this is Bereshit chapter 41, verse 45. Paro calls him, gives him a new name, Tzafnat Paneach, which I discussed 2 years ago. Vayitain lo et, oh, look at this. Look at the name of his wife. Osnat. Osnat is just a version of Ason. She's not a disaster. She is his very special wife. Osnat bat Potiphera Kohen On, and she gave him two children, Menashe and Ephraim, who became the two most numerous, strongest, and powerful tribes of the north, of the northern kingdom. So, yeah, Yosef did meet an Ason, but it was Asnat. Okay, that's just a digression. Let's get back to the story. Okay, so now, next is, now, can you see chapter 43 that I just switched to? Okay, good. Let's see if it stays when I switch back and forth. Okay, now, the Vaharav Kavad Ba'aretz. Now, the famine is really taking hold, and they're running out of food. They are going to have to go to Egypt by hook or by crook. And they are good. The brothers all get together. Vayomer Alehem Avihem. Their father says to them, notice the divine author is not naming Yaakov. It's ambiguous here. Like, who are they talking to? Their father. Are they talking to Yaakov or Yisrael? We don't know yet. It's probably Yaakov. All right. So they tell their father, we need to go back to Egypt. No, he tells them, Vayomer Alehem Avihem. He says to them, you go back to Egypt and get more food. And now Yehuda says, and I can switch back to my Safari sheet. Can you see it? Safari sheet is visible? Good. Okay, great. All right, so now Yehuda says to his father, hold on, not yet, back here. Verse 3, Yehuda says to him, not, no name. Yehuda says to his father, not named, and he says, you know, we told you we can't go back to Egypt without Binyamin. If you don't let us take Binyamin, we're not going. So, like, we're not going. It doesn't matter what you say. We're not going to even leave if you don't let us take Binyamin. All right. Yaakov is not going to go in. He is not going to go for this. And so Yaakov is not the one who answers him. The one who answers Yehuda is Yisrael. And now Yisrael comes out and he's taking over the conversation. In the Torah from now on, at the moment when God gives Yaakov his new name, there are two personae in the text, in the story. Sometimes Yaakov is speaking, sometimes Yisrael is speaking. Yisrael has a more fine-tuned antennae. He picks things up that Yaakov doesn't. All right, now Yehuda says to Yisrael, now you know who he's talking to. He says, send the boy, the Na'ar. I made it purple. Why? Because this is the divine author hinting at us that somebody else is involved in this story, and the somebody else is going to be Yosef. He says, send the boy with me, and we'll go, and we'll come back, we'll all stay alive. Otherwise, we're all going to die. Notice that Yisrael doesn't answer. Verse 8 is Yehuda's talking, and then that's the end of the verse, and then he keeps talking because he has not gotten an answer. This is a pretty good argument. We're all going to die if you don't let him go. And he'll die too. Binyamin will die. He'll too. No, he's not budging. And now Yehuda makes his pitch. Anochi e'ervena miyadi tivakshena. This is the English over here. I will be the Eravon. I will be the guarantor. I guarantee his life. Miyadi tivakshenu. You come to me, you know, The buck stops with me. That's miyadi tivakshenu. Im lo havi otiv elecha, he continues, if I don't bring him back to you, v'hitzagtiv lefanecha, and I stand him alive in front of you, if I don't do that, v'chatati lecha kol hayamim, I will be guilty. I will have sinned against you forever. Now, that's not really anything more than Reuven said. He can't say anything more than what Reuven said. He can't say more than I'm giving my life for his life. Yaakov's answer would have been, I don't care about your life. Your life is still not going to bring me or give me back my Binyamin. So the answer would always be no. But somehow, after Yehuda says these three sentences, Yisrael changes his mind and says in verse 11, I'm just going to paraphrase it, he says, okay, all right, well, gather up all these fancy, you know, spices and sweet stuff and little, you know, specialty foods and go down to Egypt and take him. So I have always been bothered by this. What in the world? How is it that these three verses here and Yehuda saying essentially what Reuven said, why does that make a difference? How did he change his mind so fast? And there are many that Parshanim all weigh in on this, and they say things about this, especially about Yehuda, you know, he'll whatever it is that he said, it can't possibly have satisfied Yaakov's fear of losing his second son. Okay, but there is an explanation that I found. These words, Anochi e'ervena, miyadi tivakshena, these are the words that Yehuda says to Yisrael. But Yisrael, listening to these words, they trigger a memory in his head. These are the words that he himself spoke many years ago. Anochi e'ervena miyadi tivakshena. It sounds just like the words that Yaakov said long ago. How long ago? Back when he was running away from Lavan and his house. Back in Bereishit chapter 31. Yaakov has picked up his whole family and he's stolen away and run off with everybody. And Lavan goes nuts and he chases after him and he finds him. They meet up at Gilad or Galed, on the east bank, not on the bank, but on the eastern side of the Jordan. The big confrontation between Lavan and Yaakov, where Lavan says, well, why did you run away like this? You stole everything from me. The children are mine. The women are mine. Everything is mine. Nothing belongs to you, Yaakov. It's all mine. It's all mine. And you shouldn't have run away. And Yaakov gets angry. You remember the story. They have a big, big argument. Vayichar li Yaakov. Yaakov gets really angry. And he and Lavan have a big quarrel. Yaakov. And he says to Lavan, he says a whole bunch of things, but Yisrael is triggered by one verse or one sentence that Yaakov said to Lavan at the end of this conversation, or I should say argument. Here it is. Anochi achatena miyadi tivakshena. Achatena, slightly different from e'ervena, but the sound is the same. Anochi e'ervena miyadi tivakshena. Yaakov said similar words to Lavan long ago. Anochi achatena miyadi tivakshena. Wow. that catches Yisrael's imagination, and he is transported back to Gilad, and he's watching his younger self talking or arguing with Lavan. Yehuda's talking in the present tense, but now Yaakov sees himself saying Yehuda's words to Lavan. Now he's curious. What else did I say? What did I say to Lavan before I said these words? Anochi achatena miyadi tivakshena. Well, wait a minute. What is Yehuda saying? Let's go back up here quick. What did Yehuda say after he said, Anochi e'ervenu miyadi tivakshena? Yehuda then said to him, Lo havi otiv elecha, if I don't bring him to you. What did Yaakov say to Lavan? Yisrael is sitting with Yehuda, but he's listening to his younger self speaking to Lavan back there in Gilad. And what did he say right before the Anochi Achatena? I said to Lavan, Trefa lo heveti elecha. These are the words of Yehuda. Lo heveti elecha. Yehuda said, Lo haviotiv elecha. The words are the same. If I don't bring him back to you, or I do not bring him back. So Yisrael is saying, wait a minute, what did I say to Lavan and why? What was I talking about? I never brought you a torn up animal. This is young Yaakov saying to Lavan, I was a wonderful shepherd for you. I worked for all those years and I took such good care of your flocks. I never let a wild beast get in among the sheep or the goats and, you know, and kill them and rip up the bodies, which I would have had to bring back to you and you would have made me pay for. I would have been responsible for the flocks. Yehuda's talking about being responsible for Binyamin. Okay, trefa lo heveti, trefa. That's another trigger word. But he listens now to what Yaakov said to Lavan right before this verse about bringing a body back to him or not bringing a body. And what did Yaakov say to Lavan before this? He said, I've worked for you for 20 years. Esrim shana anochi imach. I've worked for you for 20 years. Rechelecha v'izecha lo shikelu. There's that word. Lo shikelu. Rechelecha. Oh, it's a purple word. English translation, your female sheep and your female goats. Lo shikelu never miscarried. Well, wait a minute, Yisrael is saying to Lavan in his imagination. Your Rachel, Rachelecha is also your Rachel. He said, she's not your Rachel. Remember, Lavan was saying, all the women are mine and all the children are mine and all the flocks are mine. And Lavan, Yaakov is saying, Rachelecha, your Rachel? No, she's my Rachel. She's my wife. She's my Rachel. Lo shikelu. She always miscarried. Rechelecha, my Rachel, never miscarried. She always miscarried. She never brought a pregnancy to term. All those years we were married, she never had a live birth. She never brought a baby to term. She didn't carry the pregnancy all the way, except for one time. One time, she did bring a pregnancy to term, and she didn't miscarry. Who is that? Yosef. Yosef. She didn't miscarry. Yosef was born. And wait a minute, then. If we're talking about Yosef, what is this? Trefa lo heveti elecha. Who, what? He's going further back in time, where something about a trepha, something about a torn up animal. You see where I've changed the screen? Now I'm back in chapter 37. Did everybody see the screen that I've moved? This is chapter 37. The brothers bring back a bloody coat and they say to their father, do you know whose coat this is? Do you recognize this? And verse 33, Vayakira, Yaakov recognized the coat and he said, this is my son's tunic. A wild animal has eaten him. Tarof Yosef. Yaakov is the one who called Yosef or proclaimed him to be a tarof, a torn up person. I called my son Yosef a trefa, a tarof. But wait a minute. I'm saying trefa lo heveti. I never brought you a torn up animal. And wait a minute. Yehuda is saying the same thing. I never brought you a dead body. You called Yosef Tarof Taraf. You called him the trefa. You called him the torn up dead person, dead boy. But no one brought you a body. Yehuda is saying, the words that are coming out of Yehuda's mouth are ringing in Yisrael's ears in a new understanding. He's looking at Yehuda and realizing, they never brought me a body. They never brought me a body. And then what is the, if we go further back, now back in, I know I'm back in Gilad, Yaakov and Lavan, the end of the reverie is the beginning of the conversation with Yaakov and Lavan. And look at that. What does Yaakov say to Lavan? Chatati, which is really part of a sentence of, why, Ma Pishi, what did I ever do? What did I ever do wrong to you that you are, you know, that you've come running after me and you're, you know, you're giving me so much trouble? Chatati is what he actually said to Lavan, which was, Ma Chatati, what did I do? But now in his reverie, Yisrael hears the words, I was mistaken. I chata, I made an error. So what is the conclusion then that Yisrael comes to as he listens to his son Yehuda saying these words which sound and bring him back to that other confrontation with Lavan? He wasn't talking about Yosef with Lavan. At the time, he was talking about dead sheep. But now when he goes back to that scene, now he gets information from it. He pulls the two things together. That scene, he now incorporates that information with what Yehuda is saying. And because he is Yisrael and he is tuned in to possibilities of divine communication without actually hearing God's voice. He's tuned in now. He realizes he's getting a message. He's getting a divine message. Put that scene years ago, combine it with what Yehuda is saying now, and realize Yosef is alive. He's not dead. Yehuda is telling you that, although Yehuda doesn't know he's telling you that. He's just talking about Binyamin, but really, God is giving you a message, Yisrael, through Yehuda. You were mistaken all those years. And then, with all of that, Yehuda keeps talking. Now I'm back in Yehuda present time. And Yehuda has just made his big speech, You know, though and if I don't bring him back, I will have sinned forever to you. And then Yehuda says, hit mamahu nun ki ata shavnu ze pa'amayim. Yehuda ends up with, you know, you've delayed so much. We could have gone back and forth twice. I mean, all the time we've wasted, you know, with all this, you know, Binyamin business. And then, now Yisrael comes out of his reverie. He's back in the present. Yehuda's just talking. Vayomer Alehem Yisrael. Yaakov is now, it's not Yaakov, it's Yisrael, their father. And he says, Im Kain, if it's true, Im Kain, if this is true, that he's not talking about what Yehuda was saying. He's talking about what he learned from his trip back in time. If it's true that nobody brought me a torn up body, I've never had any proof that Yosef is dead. Im Kain, if this is true, Eifo, where is Yosef? Where is he? And then he looks at Yehuda, the messenger of the message. Yehuda is like this vessel. God uses him as the vessel, the messenger, to deliver a message to Yisrael. And now Yisrael is looking at the messenger, and he realizes this man, Yehuda, where he's part of the plan. Wherever he says he needs to go, and with whomever he needs to take with him, has to be, because that's where I will find Yosef. Eifa, where is Yosef? Yosef is where Yehuda has to go. I don't know why Yisrael is thinking. I don't understand it completely. I'm only getting a message through a glass darkly. But the message is clear. Yehuda is the messenger, and he's telling me, although he doesn't know it, he's telling me that Yosef is alive, and he is the key to getting Yosef back. And so then Yisrael gives instructions to send a particular collection of foods and delicacies with Binyamin to go down, Horid, go down, take these things down to the man for a gift. That's something else. I'm not going to get distracted by that. Horidu, take him down, take Binyamin down. Well, actually, take down to the viceroy, take down these gifts. But Horid is that language of taking somebody down to Egypt. And that's another gift from the divine author to us, so that we know for sure that Yisrael is talking about Yosef. Where have we heard these words before? A collection of fancy, spicy stuff going down to Egypt. I'm scrolling to Bereshit chapter 37. That's when the brothers decide they are going to sell Yosef to the Yishmaeli caravan, who is going down to Egypt with these same things, Nechot, Tzri, and Lot, Lehorid, to bring down to Egypt. So, purple words, that's Yosef. I'm not suggesting that Yisrael knows that Yosef was taken down to Egypt in a caravan carrying these spices. I am suggesting that the divine author is cluing us. This is for us. So we know that this is all aimed at Yosef, and perhaps Yisrael, this is to help us understand that Yisrael has a notion, a very strong feeling that Yosef is alive, and he's in Egypt, but he doesn't really know for sure, but he knows a little bit. And one last little piece of the puzzle. Back in Gilead, now I'm back in Gilead, Yaakov and Lavan are arguing. The end of the whole argument, the last words that Yaakov said to Lavan in the argument are, this is what because he's complaining. He's yelling at Lavan, I worked so hard for you and you were so terrible to me and you made me work. And I day and night, I took care of your sheep. Gnuvti yom ugnuvti laila. In context, he's saying, I took such good care of your animals that they never got stolen by day or night. But these words, ganuvti, ganuvti, they are also aimed at us, the reader. Who are these words applicable to? Yaakov is talking to Lavan about sheep. But the divine author is saying, who are these words talking about? Just in case you didn't get it yet. Anybody? What was it that Yosef said to the Sar Hamashkin, the butler, the minister of the wines? Remember, he said before he left prison, after he interpreted his dream, remember, Yaakov said to him, please remember me, because I shouldn't be here. I never did anything wrong. They threw me into jail. And this is what he said to the Sar Hamashkim in chapter 40. Ki gunov gunavti me eretz Mitzrayim. Me eretz ha'ivrim. That's what Yosef described himself as. Yosef says, I was stolen, gunov gunavti. I was stolen from my homeland, and I never did anything wrong there, and I've never done anything wrong here, and they threw me into prison. Please, when you get out, would you please remember me to the Paro, which of course he didn't do. But these words, gunov gunavti, from chapter 40, ring a bell now when we're looking back at this story, because Yisrael is right there. Does Yisrael know that Yosef described himself as being stolen? No. But we know that. We are the reader. We know all these little pieces of the puzzle. And we should be putting the pieces together to help Yisrael come to the conclusion that, yes, Yosef is still alive. And I will find him, says Yisrael, in Egypt. And therefore, he agrees to let Yehuda take him. Why? Did Yehuda convince him? Who convinces Yaakov, Yisrael, to let Yehuda take Binyamin down to Egypt? In the final analysis, Yaakov convinces himself. Younger Yaakov convinces older Yaakov, Yisrael, telegraphing a message to him over space and time that Yosef is still alive. And it's all based on these words, these trigger words. Yehuda doesn't know what he's saying. He's talking about Binyamin. But these words trigger a memory in Yisrael. He goes back to that scene, the scene in his memory, and he plays it again backwards. And he realizes we're talking about Yosef. Now, I want to show you that this is a chiasty. This is a very large chiasm stretching from chapter 31 to chapter 43. But it's It is a chiasty, and this is one of the literary techniques that the divine author, among all of the authors of the ancient world, use when they construct their stories. And so for this, I want you to look at the table that you have. Let's see, where did I put that? Not here. I thought I was able to put it here. What did I do with it? I put it up here. All right, if I switch to it right now, can you see this? Can you see this table with the blue and no? You're not seeing it. Okay, so let me stop the share and go back. I'm going to go back, go out and go back in again. And then you should be able to see it. All right, now do you see it? Blue a table that says, who persuades Yaakov to let Binyamin go to Egypt? Just one of you wiggle your fingers.
Yes.
Okay. All right. This is a tabular form showing the comparison of these two instances. So on the left, we have Yehuda speaking to Yisrael. That's present time. That's where we are right now in the story. And on the right is the meeting in Gilad, where Yaakov and Lavan have their big argument. And you can see the lineup. Yehuda says, Anochi Ervenu, here's the English in red, Anochi Ervenu miyadi tivakshenu, and that lines up with Yaakov saying to Lavan at the end of the beginning of Yehuda's speech is the end of Yaakov's diatribe to Lavan. And then Yehuda speaks going forward from this block to this block to this block. And in Yaakov's talking to Lavan back way back in time, 20, 30 years ago, the progression of the verses is in reverse. So Yehuda says first, Anochi Ervenu. The first thing that Yaakov said to Lavan was, Ma Pishi, Ma Chatati. So the beginning of the Lavan-Yaakov argument is the last block here. So do you see how it's going in reverse order? And that is typical of any chiasm where you have one section of verses going forward and the other going backwards, and they meet in the middle. So we have Anochi Ervenu, Anochi Achatenu. And then Yehuda says, Im lo ha'aviyoti, and see a black, I bolded the words that are parallel. Lo heveti, lo heveti. But the word, the extra word in the Lavan Yaakov confrontation is the trefa, and that's the key. We're talking about a torn up body, which Yehuda is trying to say, but he doesn't know he's trying to say it. I never brought you one. But now Yisrael understands. All these years was so stupid. I never asked them for the body. How could I have believed he was dead? And there was no proof that he was dead. So that's why in the end, Yaakov, Yisrael, come to the conclusion, Chatati, I made a really big mistake. I was wrong. Yosef is alive. And here now, when Yaakov and Lavan are talking about Rachelecha, your Rachel, not miscarrying, that is completely empty. That box here on the right has a corollary on the left, because Yehuda is not talking about Rachel or sheep. He's talking about Binyamin. All right. Are there any questions about the construction and the parallels of these two stories, because that's the basis of my thesis. So speak up now, or you can speak up later. All right. I want to add one more thing, one more layer to the complexity that's going on here, because people are talking, and they're talking to each other, but they're talking past each other, and they're talking around each other. which makes for a very complex and very rich scene here. So I'm going to go out and go back again. Now I'm going to go back to just the text for, let me get the text right. Okay, I think this is right. Here we go. Okay. Here's Yehuda. That's where I am right now. This is Yehuda speaking. So now this is something else. This is another layer of complexity. Yehuda is speaking here about Binyamin, right? I will be the guarantor. I'm responsible for him. Im lo haviyoti velecha, if I don't bring him back to you and stand him living, you know, stand him up in front of you alive and well, chatati kolcha kolimim, I will be forever a sinner. I will forever be guilty. Yeah, he's talking about Binyamin. That's true. But Yehuda, we know, has, we've been watching Yehuda for quite a while now in the story of Yaakov Yosef. Remember how Yehuda was really the ringleader of the plot, not, it wasn't even a plot, the final solution for Yosef. Well, why should we kill him? Ma betza, why should we, what advantage do we have to killing him? Let's sell him and get some money for him. That's Yehuda. Yehuda's so crass. Yehuda is so, he's so dismissive of Yosef. Yehuda is the one who started this. Yehuda's the one who let all of this happen. Yehuda has a problem with haker, as we all know. Recognition, recognizing his position, recognizing that his responsibility as a leader, that he has responsibilities, and he has responsibilities for the welfare and the life of his brothers. He has a lot of trouble with haker, recognizing. We have a whole story of Yehuda and Tamar, where Yehuda doesn't recognize, and finally Tamar teaches him what it means to haker, to recognize and take responsibility for what you do. That would be step one in Yehuda's 12 steps of teshuva to get back his haker, to get back his responsibility, his leadership. To deserve the leadership, he has to earn it. He has to be it. He has to learn haker. And he has to do teshuvah, you have to admit what you've done. There has to be a vidui of some kind. Rambam says you have to say it out loud. Well, before you can say it out loud, you have to say it to yourself. That would be a prelude to saying it out loud, is getting it, you know, getting yourself ready by internally thinking about, I was wrong. So we can read this part of the story as Yehuda subconsciously taking the next step towards teshuvah, complete teshuvah. He's not there yet. What he says here is about Binyamin, but we can read it subtextually and subconsciously. These words apply to his role in Yosef's, the tragedy of Yosef being almost killed. Anochi e'ervenu, I was responsible for him. Miyadi tivakshenu, Daddy, you should have made me respond. You should have made me speak, explain, where is Yosef all those years ago? Miyadi tivakshenu, you should have demanded him from me. Lo haviotiv elecha, I didn't bring him back to you all those years ago. I let him get thrown in that pit. When he disappeared from the pit, I didn't care. I didn't bring him back to you. Chatati, I am wrong. I have done a terrible thing. I have sinned. Yehuda, in the words that he speaks out loud, are the words directed at Binyamin. I will be his guarantor. I will bring him back. And if I don't, I will be guilty. But at the same time, subconsciously, he's taking that first step towards recognizing what he needs to do to be the leader of the family, which is you have to make your vidui. You have to acknowledge that what you did in the past was wrong. And so we can read this subtextually as Yehuda saying, well, we hope he one day will say, I was responsible. I should have been responsible. I should have brought him back to you. I didn't do any of those things. I did not guarantee his life. I did not do anything to save him. Chatati. I was wrong. And I need forgiveness. And I need to do teshuvah. So, this then is what I really wanted to talk about 2 years ago, but I didn't have the chance. And so for me, this quells my questions about how Yaakov Yisrael could just change his idea about sending Binyamin from Reuven to Yehuda, because it wasn't Yehuda that convinced him. So, any questions, comments?
Great, thank you.
Okay, good.
Okay, you like triastic structure, I remember from last time. That's
Yeah. This happens. These things always come to me in shul. This took a long time to percolate in my head. But you listen to the Torah reading, and so all of a sudden I felt like Yisrael. Like, wait, I've heard. What does that sound like? It just drove me crazy. And then I went back and I said, yeah, it's the same thing. What is the connection between these two stories? How could it be? And then you dig further and further and you realize, oh, wait a minute. It's not just these two verses. You keep going back, you know, you follow the bouncing ball and you say, oh, wait a minute. Look at all this. Oh, wow. And then suddenly, a problem that I always suffered with, I stopped suffering with. So.
Okay, very good. Okay, thank you. And
all right.
Okay, look.
Thank you all.
To see you. Okay. Tomorrow morning we'll have my regular shiur, and I was debating whether to continue on the Amida or go to Hanukkah, but I figured I can do both tomorrow because we're at the Lamal Shinim, and that actually ties into Ma'osur. So I think we'll discuss a little bit Ma'osur tomorrow, which I don't think I've discussed in the past. So that'll be our regular whatever Siddur shiur tomorrow at 9:15. Then the Rabbi Liebtag, of course, starts on Sunday, and probably by the middle of next week we should have our sort of our winter semester, whatever you want to call it, or 2025 classes all put together. And up. I think some of them are actually up on the website already. But anyways, okay. I want to wish everybody Shabbat Shalom, Hanukkah Sameach, enjoy, and okay, be well. We look forward to learning with you soon, and invite a friend to join in.
Okay. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you again, Ruth. Okay.
Tada, Ruth. Thank you. It was very elegant.
Thank you, Jack.
Okay.
Yay.
I couldn't get the other post sheets, Brooke. I don't know, with the link. I didn't know how to get it posted. But that's right. But
the Sephardic sheets are just the text.
I don't know how to. That's. I need someone on a higher level to do that for me. But okay. All right. Laila Tov, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach. Okay.